This is the Medicast, July 19th, 2010.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the Medicast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Podmedic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to this week's show. We have a lot of good things coming up for you, including a review of allergy symptoms and treatments later on in this episode following the news. But first off, I'd like to remind all of you that you can find additional information at the home of the Medicast, medicast.com/blog. Over there, you'll find links in the show notes link right at the top of the page. For each episode, go ahead and click on that link. You'll find the most recent episode listed first and all of the other episodes running down in reverse chronological order. And you can go ahead and check those episodes out. You'll find links to the news items discussed in each episode, additional resource links for the tip of the week. If we have an interview segment that week, there'll be links to whoever we interviewed, their blog or their website or whatever they're talking about. So you want to follow up and get the information there. You can also leave comments on any of the articles over on the Medicast blog if you want to get in touch with me. That's a good way to do so and share those comments with the other listeners and readers of the Medicast blog. You can also, of course, send me an email. Send those emails in to podmedic@mac.com. I love to hear from you. If you have any questions, comments, need information, maybe I made a mistake and you want me to make a correction, this is all a community effort here, folks, so you definitely want to make sure you get in touch with me. And again, that email address, podmedic@mac.com. Or call in on the voicemail line, 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC. You know, it's been a while since we've had a voicemail on the show, and when you call in, I will play your voicemail right here if you have a question or a comment about the show. We love to share them with the listeners. So go ahead and call in on that voicemail line. Again, 941-306-3342. Let's jump on in and cover some listener email. I got an email from listener and good friend and fellow blogger, Rogue Medic. I won't use his actual name, but Rogue Medic over at the Rogue Medic blog. You can find him at roguemedic.blogspot.com. And you know, the Rogue Medic is a big proponent of helping us understand and look for good research and research-based EMS treatments so that we can have protocols that aren't based on assumptions or preconceived notions about what we can and can't do. Let's get research out there to handle it. And Rogue Medic was touching base with me about an article I sent to him. He's been doing a long-running segment or series on his blog regarding pain management in EMS and how we are really not allowed to manage pain the way we should, that there's no reason for us to have to deal with the constant pain of a patient who is going to get definitive pain management the minute they get to the ER. Why do they have to suffer throughout the ambulance trip? He, and I think others like him, have a good idea and a good option for that. But I just wanted to thank him for going ahead and sending me back an email in response to the article I sent him. And I'll tell you, if you have been watching the Medicast TV weekly commentary, little short video segments I've been putting up every Friday, you will know that last week's episode, I actually was talking about this very issue and sent you all over to the Rogue Medic blog. So I want you to check out that video segment and then go check out the Rogue Medic. I think you'll enjoy his commentary. He doesn't pull any punches over there, and yet he really provides good quality research links and links to authoritative resources for you over there. And it's the kind of blog I like to read. And Rogue Medic, thanks for shooting me an email. I also got an email in from another blogger friend of mine, actually a nurse blogger, but she's an emergency room nurse, so she's kind of like one of us, and she's been a big proponent of several EMS blogs out there. Kim McAllister over at the Emergent blog checking in with me with regards to our new show, we've actually put out a new program. I started another podcast called Insights in Nursing. But, you know, it's a panel discussion. It's a lot of fun. And we talk about nursing topics, but we have a good time at the same time. And I thought after I saw Kim's email that it might be a good time to tell you about it. And I think you might enjoy the show, even though it's not EMS specific. It certainly is healthcare topic, and we have a good time on the show and talk about a variety of different things. We tend to get off topic quite a bit, and you might enjoy hearing some of your favorite bloggers and, of course, me talking about things a little in a more loose setting where we're not quite so regimented like you have here on the Medicast with the news and then the tip of the week. So this is a little more open-ended, and you might enjoy that. So I thought I'd let you check that out. Again, that's insightsinnursing.com, or you can find Insights in Nursing new and notable this week over in iTunes, which is really cool. So if you find the medical podcast area over in iTunes, you'll actually find the Insights in Nursing is listed as one of the new and noteworthy podcasts over there. And that's exciting. Finally, I got an email in from listener Stacy. Now, I originally sent back an email to her calling her Mabel. So, Stacy, first off, sorry I called you Mabel, but I think you signed your email sent from my iPod, Mabel. So is your iPod named Mabel? I didn't know you named iPods, but I guess I could name mine. I certainly am with it more than I'm with my wife, it seems. So maybe I should, I don't know, give my iPod a name. But anyway, Stacy, thank you so much for your question. So here was what Stacy's question was. Stacy asked, and she said she was embarrassed to ask the question. And I got to tell you, Stacy, don't be embarrassed because you stumped the pod medic. So it must have been a good question, right? She was having a question about what does it mean when you say a medication is a percentage concentration. So, for instance, you know, if something is a 50% solution, what does that mean? Is there a standardized meaning of what 50% solution or 5% solution is that is standardized across the board? So whether we're talking about dextrose or we're talking about sodium, what are we talking about? And, you know, quite honestly, I thought it was kind of, it seemed obvious to me, and I was wrong, first of all, when I responded back to her originally, but I did check my answer. But it seemed like, oh, well, you just read the label, and the label will tell you the concentration. Okay, yeah, it will. That was the, you know, the duh answer. But her question went a little deeper than that. Does that labeling have a standardized basis? And you know what? It does. So I already sent Stacy an email back because I do respond back to every email. It might take me a couple of days, but I do. Stacy, the answer is that it is grams dissolved in 100 milliliters. Okay? So it's grams per 100 milliliters. So a 5% solution of dextrose in water, so D5W, would be 5 grams of dextrose dissolved in 100 milliliters of water. So if you had a liter of that, how many grams would it be? 50 grams of dextrose dissolved in 1,000 milliliters of water. So that's the standardized solution. Of course, you can extend that out to D50. You can extend it to the 0.9% saline solution, normal saline. So you can go ahead and extrapolate that out. But I did find the answer, Stacy. And, you know, this is just points out one of the reasons I started this show. I started this show because I needed a way to stay up to date on knowledge, a way to kind of intrigue myself and give myself an opportunity to go out there and learn new things. And I didn't find another podcast like the Medicast, so I went ahead and made myself one. And, you know, this is the reason why, because I don't know everything. And if you ask me a question I don't know the answer to, I'll try to find the answer. And I'll tell you I don't know the answer. So I appreciate it, Stacy. Don't be embarrassed by asking any question. If you don't know the answer to something, you need to be able to stand up and talk about it. And that's just a characteristic of a good EMS provider, to be honest with you. You need to be able to say, I don't know. And that's hard. You want to be knowledgeable. You want to be authoritative when you're dealing with your patients or dealing with other medical professionals. But I'll tell you, the thing that sets a great medic apart from an adequate medic is somebody who's willing to say, I don't know. Hey, doc, I've never seen this before. What am I looking at? or say to the patient when they ask you a question, you know, I don't know the answer to that, but we're going to take good care of you and we're going to do the best we can. You know, there's nothing wrong with honesty, and especially in those types of situations. So I would urge you to go ahead and be like that, and don't be embarrassed to ask a question if you don't know the answer. You know, it might be fun to laugh about it a little bit, but get the answer to the question. And Stacy, thank you for sending me this question. Time now for this week's news, and let's jump on into our first news item. A kind of sad story I picked up out of, oh, let's see where this is. It looks like it is, oh, heck, Austin, Texas. So this is down in Texas, and unfortunately, a paramedic candidate who was 48 years old died during a training session, apparently from sudden cardiac arrest. Now, he was doing a skills station where he was having to, I guess early in the hiring process, he had to demonstrate he could do some basic things. One of the tests was to carry or move the motorized cot across a grassy area with a 185-pound mannequin on it. Now, you know, you wouldn't think that would be that stressful. It says it was level ground, but a grassy area, so a little difficult to push and move around, but not impossible. We've all done it, right? So apparently he collapsed while doing this test, and rescuers immediately were there because, heck, his preceptors were there. They immediately tended to him and got him in an ambulance and took him to the hospital, but he died from that injury. And apparently, just a sudden cardiac arrest is what they're calling it. This could happen to anybody. There was no evidence that he was ill in any way, but, you know, I just like the, it's got to be devastating to the rest of the members of his class and to that service to have something like this happen, not particularly strenuous activity for him to be engaged in. And certainly, I don't think any safety concerns were associated with this particular incident. But it's still tragedy nonetheless. And I consider this a line of duty death for this individual. It's a sad situation, but he was in training to become one of us. And it certainly counts as far as I'm concerned. Moving right along, we have a great article over at emsresponder.com, and this is an article looking at one of Maryland State Police's flight medics. That's right, in the state of Maryland, our public service flight medics are state troopers, and they fly around, and not only do they are involved in their duties as a police officer, involved in maybe car chases, tracking down fugitives, search and rescue, they also are our primary trauma and medical emergency transport by air in the state of Maryland. And there's a great article about Maryland State Police Trooper First Class Greg Lance, and talking about that he's a paramedic and a trooper. He does both, and he is okay with the distinction that he can do both. Just a great article if you're interested in looking at, you know, different ways you can be a paramedic and do a lot of different, you know, do different things with your skills. One of them, at least in the state of Maryland, and I know in neighboring Delaware, you can be a state trooper and also a paramedic. And there's always a call for that. It's an unusual combination, and not everybody is built for that kind of program. But if it's something of interest to you, just wanted to let you know it's out there. You can find a link in the show notes to this article and check it out for yourself. I think it's something that appeals to a certain amount of our population as EMS providers, and it might be something you're looking for. Finally, our last article is an article I picked up out of British Columbia. Another tragic story, not one of our own going down, but a bull rider was succumbed to injuries sustained while bull riding, died at the hospital after he got there. But there's a complaint here that the ambulance cuts in the local service caused his death, that he might not have died had there been an ambulance on scene at the rodeo. Apparently, the two ambulances for this community were on a response to a motor vehicle accident at another part of the district and were nowhere near the rodeo when this guy was thrown off the bull and then trampled by the bull. And he got up and struggled to the side where he collapsed. So probably multi-system trauma, many injuries. We don't know what exactly killed this individual, but I can safely say he wasn't killed by an ambulance. There wasn't an ambulance that ran over him. He wasn't trying to ride on an ambulance. He was riding on an angry bull. And, you know, if I enjoy watching a rodeo as much as the next guy does. And probably because the reason I watch is to see if somebody's going to like have a really bad accident because they got on the back of an angry bull. It's a sport. I get it. I understand. But, you know, if you're going to ride a bull and then risk getting trampled, you're going to have to put up with some risk of injury or death from that. That said, should there be medical care available at a rodeo? Absolutely. But if the only two ambulances in this district were already covering other medical emergencies, is it because there were cutbacks and there should have been a third ambulance? Well, why doesn't the rodeo pay to have a paramedic standby on duty at the scene? Why don't they pay an off-duty ambulance to come in and stage at the rodeo? There are ways around this problem. I certainly don't think it falls and should be blamed on the local service. It's a tragedy. It's upsetting. No one likes to see anyone die. If the ambulance had been there, he probably still would have died because he did make it to the hospital and he died a few hours later. I suspect the multi-system trauma he sustained was severe enough that his injuries were probably going to kill him anyway, just based on the way it's described in this story. But I think we need to be careful when citizens start complaining about how we caused somebody to die because we weren't there. That's not the way it works, folks. You get sick or you get injured, and we do the best we can. But you didn't die because we didn't show up. You died because you were sick or injured. We try to get there as fast as we can. And it's, again, falls back to educating our public and letting them know what we need them to do and how our system works. And unfortunately, we're not going to be able to be standing next to every person that falls over with a cardiac arrest. Accidents happen, tragedies happen, and despite the best ambulance coverage in the world, people are still going to die. You know that. I know that. We just need to help them know that. So I urge you to check out this article. It might be something good for a topic of discussion on how to deal with public outcry for things like this. Similar things happened in the blizzard last year when people were dying or injured because they couldn't because they felt they couldn't get an ambulance to them. It's a tragedy, but things happen. Anyway, you'll find links to all of the stories in this news segment over at medicast.com/blog in the show notes area of the site. Hi, this is Jamie Davis, the PodMedic, and this is a segment on allergies and allergic reactions, and we're going to be talking about a couple of things in this tip of the week about allergies. First, we'll talk about specifically what are allergies. We'll look at the immune system and do a basic quick review of the immune system. We'll look at the physiological causes of an allergic reaction, and we'll also look at signs, symptoms, and treatments of an allergic reaction. So what are we talking about when we call something an allergy? What the heck is an allergy? Well, I did some research online because that's what I do, and I found that the NIH has one of the most concise descriptions of an allergy. An allergy is described there as, and I'll read it here off the monitor, allergies are the result of inappropriate immune responses to normally harmless substances. And that's the key. The things that people are allergic to are not snake venom. They are things that are normally inane, harmless things. Dust, pollen, peanut butter. You know, I love peanut butter. If I was allergic to peanut butter, you know, that would be it. I'd probably, you know, that would be time to check out, folks, because I can't eat peanut butter anymore. So, you know, normally innocuous things. And it's a shame, and it's just one of those things that happens. It's the sixth leading cause of chronic disease in the United States and costs the country about $18 billion in healthcare costs to the system. And, you know, we're part of that healthcare system and cost. And I think it's important for you all to think about this. If you could recognize an onset of a moderate to severe allergic reaction early in the process and get ahead of it and get treatments on board and transport that patient to the appropriate facility, you could hold off a much more severe allergic reaction and help this patient avoid additional healthcare costs and maybe only spend a couple $1,000s in ambulance transport and ER costs rather than getting intubated and put in the ICU and spending tens of thousands of dollars on the same thing. So this is really important, and I think this is something that EMS excels at, and this can be a true emergency. It's also important to understand allergies and asthma appear to be on the rise in the United States, so it's something we should keep track of and keep in mind. Let's do a quick immune system review. The immune system is a network of cells, tissues, organs, and they work together to defend the body against attacks by foreign invaders. It, of course, must first recognize a foreign invader, and then it must mobilize and attack and destroy those foreign invaders. And it does this quite effectively. First off, there are many parts of the immune system, and it starts with our skin. Our skin is part of the immune system. It's a great barrier to things outside. It's our personal flesh-colored wetsuit. At least in my case, it's flesh-colored. Your suit may vary. But certainly, it is an important part of the system. The GI tract has parts of it that are great parts of the immune system. I mean, think about it. If you were going somewhere and trying to sneak in, and the first thing you met was an acid bath, well, guess what? Great part of the immune system, right? So certainly, there are different aspects of the immune system, and this is just an indication of how effective this system is. If the immune system has some issues, if it fails to recognize an appropriate response, or it actually recognizes the body's own tissues in certain parts of the body as a foreign invader, then the immune system can get out of whack. And we see this in cases of allergic reaction and asthma, where it's an overblown reaction to an outside external source of problem, or in cases of autoimmune disorders such as lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, and others, we see patients having a problem with the body attacking its own systems, not being able to recognize something going on in its own body as its own tissues. And so the immune system begins to attack the body itself. The organs of the immune system are all over the body, and they include the lymphoid organs, including, of course, the white blood cells, the lymphocytes in the blood system. And, of course, those come from the bone marrow. Some of them go to the thymus to mature into T cells. Others reside or are stored or move through the lymphatic system and are transported around the body there and in the bloodstream. So all of these cells and parts of the system are there. We also have the cells themselves. Again, I mentioned T cells. There are also B cells, plasma cells, and phagocytes. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but there's a link in the show notes that does a great review of the immune system. So we're just doing a brief overview here. Cytokines are also mentioned briefly here. They are the chemical communicators. Those are how the cell sends a chemical signal to other cells in the immune system on what to do next, how to respond, how to recognize the invader, and how to prepare the defenses. Causes of the allergic reaction. So we have an allergic reaction. We have an immune response that's to an innocuous substance, but the body thinks it's bad. What's causing that? Well, this is usually attributed to the immunoglobulin. I can't say that word. Let's try it together, folks. Immunoglobulin. IgE. That's why I like abbreviations. IgE is the immunoglobulin that causes allergic reactions. And IgE, I always try to remember it, E for emergency. IgE is associated with allergic reactions, and emergencies are what allergic reactions are. So that's how I distinguish it from IgM and IgA and the others in the immunoglobulins. I keep track of it by doing that. What are some of the more common triggers of allergic reactions? Well, pollen. We've talked about a lot of these. Pollen, dust mites, mold spores, pet dander, food, insect stings, and medicines, all common causes of allergic reactions. It's important for you to try to figure out what the person is allergic to. Usually they can tell you. It's not something that just crops up out of the blue for most people. They know they have allergies, and they know what they're allergic to. And, you know, in cases of like a bee sting or something like that, it catches them by surprise, but they knew they were allergic to bee stings ahead of time in many cases. So what signs and symptoms are we looking for when someone has an allergic reaction? Well, we usually break them up into two different types, mild allergic reactions and moderate to severe allergic reactions. Let's talk about mild allergic reactions first. Mild allergic reactions usually present with hives, especially in the face and neck, itching. They may have nasal congestion, that stuffiness, that runny nose, rashes, watery red eyes. Think about the response, okay? The body is having an immune response here. It's thinking there's a foreign invader that's dangerous. It's trying to keep that foreign invader out, and it does it in a couple of different ways. The body starts to make the blood vessels leaky so that plasma starts to leak into the surrounding tissues. This is hoping to flush out some of the stuff from the bloodstream if it's gotten into the blood. And this is what causes that raised area on the skin. It's the hives. Nasal congestion, again, the mucous membranes trying to flush the system out. And so all this, you know, snot comes running out your nose, for lack of a, there's your good medical term for the day. Rashes occur. Again, this is usually related to the subcutaneous irritation by the leaky plasma in the vascular system. And watery red eyes, again, another place that is trying to flush away. And so you have the tear ducts just releasing fluid, trying to flush the system. In a mild reaction, not too bad. However, mild reactions should not be discounted by EMS providers or any medical professional. A mild reaction can turn bad fast. I've seen it happen. It is one of the scariest things you'll ever see. And if you think you're scared, imagine how a patient feels when one minute they were just scratching an itch and a minute later they literally can't breathe. So watch your patients carefully. Just because it's a mild reaction, don't assume it won't turn to a severe reaction or a moderate reaction very quickly. Ask the patient or family members what happened the last time. Maybe that'll give you an indicator of how severe it's likely to get. But even if they have not had a severe reaction in the past, they should be monitored and checked for to see if it's going to become more severe. And in cases where they don't have a history of it, it may be that they don't need to go to the hospital. And their family members, or they can monitor it themselves. But if they have a history of moderate to severe allergic reaction, they should probably be seen by someone, and you should be prepared to administer medications such as an EpiPen in the case of BLS providers, or in the case of ALS providers, epinephrine, possibly an albuterol treatment, diphenhydramine, other medications to treat this patient, IV fluids. Moderate to severe allergic reactions, we're talking about them now. Abdominal pain, chest pain or tightness, diarrhea, difficulty breathing, difficulty swallowing, dizziness, flushing or redness of the face, nausea and vomiting, swelling of the face, eyes or tongue, weakness, wheezing, fear, anxiety, and unconsciousness. Quite a list. However, you should understand that this is all, again, part of the immune system trying to get rid of things. Diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, the GI system is trying to void itself. The patient's having a sympathetic system response to the shock that is coming on from the impending anaphylaxis, perhaps, in which case they're having everything that goes along with a severe sympathetic response and shifting of the blood away from central organs to the vital organs. So you know, GI tract shuts down so that blood can be shunted to the brain, the heart, and the lungs. You can also see in cases of fear and anxiety. Is that a fear and anxiety a psychological response? Well, it's a psychological symptom, but I think anyone that's been around for a while will tell you, patients that have respiratory distress symptoms, if their anxiety level ramps up suddenly, it's usually a bad sign. It's usually an indication they are suddenly running out of the ability to manage their own breathing. You may need to ventilate them quickly. They may require intubation soon. The patient's anxiety level in cases of respiratory distress, in my experience and in other people I've talked to, you should pay a lot of attention to a sudden change and increase in their anxiety level. It usually means that they are no longer able to compensate for their shortness of breath. How do we treat the allergic reaction? Mild reactions, we're going to remove the allergen from the patient, if possible. Remove the patient from the allergen. We want to get them out of the situation that they're in. And this may mean, if it's a topical irritant, we may need to flush them, just as we would with any kind of dermal exposure in an environmental emergency. This is an allergic reaction. We should be able to treat that. We may provide antihistamines. Diphenhydramine is the antihistamine that most will use, known as Benadryl as an over-the-counter medication, but diphenhydramine administered IV push, usually 25 milligrams, and in that case, it might need to be repeated for some patients. This is going to make them a little drowsy, but it usually will be all they need, And if this is not something they have a problem with or a history of moderate or severe reaction, it may be all they need. People with rashes, you can tell them to do something like an oatmeal bath. Keep the patient cool. If someone is hot, it will make them itchier. So again, anything you can do, loose-fitting clothing, calamine lotion, and in some cases, if the patient has already had it prescribed, a hydrocortisone cream might be indicated. Now, I know these don't fall into the EMS sector of medications, but if the patient asks you and they have it already prescribed, you could just kind of say, hey, you know, you could follow your doctor's advice if that's something that's bothering you. Again, they need to talk to their own primary care doctor, but this is something that you could probably, you know, be okay with if it's just a mild allergic reaction. What are we talking about with moderate to severe reactions? This is the one we usually train for, right? So we know that BLS providers are going to be ready with that EpiPen. If it's not theirs, they may have the patient's own EpiPen. Some services and systems have EpiPens in the BLS bags. You're going to remove that cause of the allergen and then maintain airway and oxygenation, so O2 first, but then be ready with that EpiPen. Or, in the case of ALS providers, IM or sub-Q epinephrine, 0.01 milligrams per kilogram of 1 to 1,000 IV, 1 to 1,000 epinephrine. Do not use 1 to 1,000 epinephrine IV. So, I did not say that. IM or sub-Q, 1 to 1,000, 0.01 milligrams per kilogram, up to a 0.3 milligram dose. And that may be repeated according to your protocols. They may also need IV fluids for hypotension. Remember those leaky vessels, that can be quite severe. And in the case of anaphylaxis, that blood pressure can rapidly bottom out. And I've seen patients in the hospital setting when they have a severe allergic reaction and we're trying to manage it, they can take liters of fluid. It's amazing. You just pump it into them and they just keep taking more. And there's no sign of respiratory problems and there's no sign of other issues. And the blood pressure is still hanging out around 80 systolic. So be prepared for that. Now, again, follow your protocols. And of course, whenever administering a fluid bolus, you want to be monitoring lung sounds and looking for signs of fluid overload and be especially careful in patients with a cardiac history. But it's something to consider. And then, of course, be prepared to assist with ventilations with this patient. And in the case of ALS providers, be prepared to intubate and manage that airway aggressively. In cases where that airway is swelling shut, you may need to be proactive with intubation. There are a lot of great resources I provided for you in the show notes for this particular segment. You'll find those over at the site and good resources from the National Institutes of Health and others. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to remind all of you that you should definitely head over to the MedicCast blog, mediccast.com/blog, where you will find links to all the resources, news items, and other information discussed in this episode. You can go ahead over there, find the link for show notes at the top of the page, go ahead and click on that link, and that'll take you right to the episode listing. You'll find the most recent episode listed first, and then in reverse chronological order, and you can scroll back through that list and back into the pages of archives if you're looking for a particular episode. In addition to that, you can always find additional articles and resources over there, and I urge you to get back in touch with me and communicate with the other readers and listeners of the MedicCast by leaving comments on the articles and posts over there. You know, it's a great way. I love to hear from you that way, and it's good to share with the other listeners by leaving a comment on someone's blog, and I like to get comments all the time, so definitely contact me that way. Every time you leave a comment, it shoots me an email, so it's just like sending me an email if you want to do it that way. Of course, you can send me an email. Send those emails into podmedic@mac.com and I will get back to you. I return every email I get. It might take me a couple of days, but I will get back to you. And I will try to answer your comment or your question. Send me news links or things you might think I want to include in a future episode. I love to get those. I don't always include them, but I do read them. And so I urge you to continue sending those to me. And some of you are very good at that. And I really appreciate it because every now and then there's those weeks where I'm short an article or the article link I had disappeared off the website that I was looking at and I need to go ahead and find another link to fill in. And it's a great relief to be able to go into my email inbox and find that link that someone sent me earlier in the week. So definitely keep that up. Of course, don't forget you can call in on the voicemail line. That voicemail line number is 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC. And of course, Facebook, Twitter, and all of the other ways you can catch up with me. You'll usually find me under the handle PodMedic. And of course, the Facebook fan page for the MedicCast is facebook.com/MedicCast. That's going to close out the show. I will wrap up, as I always do, with some great PodSafe music from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. This is a song we've played before here, usually in the summertime, by great independent music artist, podcast supporter, Jeff Smith. And Jeff's got a song here called No More Summertime Blues. If you like what you hear, go ahead and check out his site over at thejeffsmith.com. And you can also find his music over in iTunes. And I've provided a link in the show notes to check out those musical items over in iTunes if you'd like. And, you know, go ahead and buy one of Jeff's songs. It's a great way to show your support for him. And he's one of the best supporters of podcasts by a musical artist. And I like to give something back to Jeff. He's got some good music, and I enjoy playing it here on the show. I'll be back again next week, every Sunday night, with another episode of the MedicCast. And in the meantime, I want you all to please remember Scene Safety and BSI.
I don't need to talk about it. You've probably heard it all before. Open up your door. And when the sun comes out, you know I'm gonna shout. I'll never feel the way I do like I feel with you. No blues, no more summertime blues. Oh no. No blues, no more summertime blues. It seems like years since it's been warm like this, deep inside my soul. When the summer wind comes blowing in, there's something I really gotta show. So let the sun shine, it's gonna be fine.